So
I was gonna fill up my water cup.
Yeah, you can go fill up your water cup. We got 12 minutes. Well, yeah, 12 minutes before the show. You can go fill up that water cup, depending on how big it is. All right, so we are here. It is it's a pre-show for Bitcoin veterans. Go out there and share this across everything you got. Hopefully on Twitter, mostly. That's where we're getting our best reach. So if you go out there and retweet this and say, hey, get in here. We got a special show of Bitcoin veterans tonight. We've got some cyber veterans. And some of you guys know bad guy Scooter, also a good guy biker back in the day. You've got Gary, who's here from the cyber team. He's done a ton of stuff with inside the Navy. I'm sure he'll fill you in. What episode did we have on Gary on, like, back in the day? It was like episode 20, maybe somewhere around there. Yeah. So you kind of want to know who Gary is. You can go back in. And we've also got Travis West join us tonight. And Travis, we need to make a proper introduction with you. You work with us at Swan. And have some really interesting backgrounds doing some things that I'm going to let you get into. And I think you guys are going to have an absolute blast tonight with the show.
I think we're all going to have an absolute blast. That's
for Mike, are you sticking around?
Yeah.
Mario?
Yeah.
I thought, okay, we'll see.
What's up, nerds? Don't mind my vacuum. I just put that out of shot.
Just standing in for you.
Yeah, no, it's good.
You know, actually, I should ask, you had me do that 3D print mod for that vacuum. How's that working out for you?
It's a little loose, so diameter's got to be a little tighter.
I guess I was giving you the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Well, I like the little, like, ribbed bumps along the inside of it. That was good for the friction.
That's been one of my running jokes for a minute now, the vacuum mods, for sure. I'm 3D printing everything. Got to print some mods for friends, right?
Yeah, it's just an extra attachment, and the friction's to hold it on. What else would it be used for?
Cleaning, of course.
Cleaning. Sucking.
You say sucking, I guess.
Nice shirt there, Shane.
Hey, I was going to say, I really like your hat. Hey, Matt Hill.
I almost wore the same shirt.
Yeah, Matt Hill, I don't know if he's out there or not, but if anybody's out there and wants to clip this one and say, hey, look at these two guys wearing some Start 9 stuff, thanks for showing up last week for just a minute. And, you know, if you want to sponsor the show, we'd love to have you as a sponsor. You know, Start 9's an amazing group of guys out there doing some good stuff to protect your... I guess your digital sovereignty. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, plus the first open. Go ahead.
I was going to say, plus they send you the power supply. It's big enough to run the fan too. A lot of these guys send you these all-in-one kits and people can't figure out where they're unstable. It's because they don't have a big enough power unit with them. They always include a big one, which is important.
Including a big one is important.
My guys, God, not the size isn't everything, guys.
The innuendo that is innuendo that is flying around this place tonight, man. You guys,
good times.
How do I find the live chat? YouTube, what man, YouTube?
There's one on YouTube.
YouTube's.
We also have one on Twitter.
Okay,
it's all fair.
One with the new update for Twitter for how live video is done. I don't know if there's a live chat for Twitter anymore.
You know where there is a live chat on zap.stream, which is an Austria streaming service.
There is a live chat on Twitter. All you have to do, if you're streaming it live, you know, from the pink Twitter Lives, you can go in there at the bottom and put in any comment you like, and it will register here as well.
Oh, I did not know that. I learned something today.
Isn't I told my kids I was going to be on TV tonight. My wife looked at me like, oh, really? And I was like, just put it on the TV. Just go to YouTube. Just put it on the TV. They'll see Dad. It's going to be great. So maybe they're watching. I don't know.
It's my nine-year anniversary today. So
wow. You know, congratulations.
I'm a little bit in the doghouse right now, but it's, you know.
There we go.
I would assume that this is like a reprieve for your wife, right? You doing this?
Oh, yeah. Anytime I'm not bothering her is usually a good thing. So
right,
so she's happy you're doing this.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm a cheap Bitcoiner, so we've been in the basement suite too long, you know. She needs some room. She needs her own wing of the house. It's about time, guys. What do you think?
Windmoon. I saw Lexis Broussard was in the chat. That's my sister. Hi.
Hey. Hi, Gary's sister.
Just trying to bump the numbers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shane said it was a little weak.
So. Hey,
Angela Krause. Gary's wife says he should shave his mustache.
Hey, there's my beautiful wife. Thank you. Look at that headshot. Hi, Angela.
Good job, man. Way outside your numbers.
Nice.
Thanks for letting growing, us Gary tonight.
Wait, hold on, Shane. Excuse you. The mustache is for Nashville, and that's going to be a uniform item, inspectable. So make sure you guys got it right and tight.
Does she not like it that short? She wants it longer? Like, what about that
she
mustache?
She wants the power stash is what she's saying.
All the way down, huh?
Yeah.
Fu Manchu.
Yeah,
then maybe braid it when it gets underneath, you know?
It doesn't grow like that. It stops right here, and then this is all patchy, which is why the mustache is the only thing that I will grow. Gary, yeah. Better shave your stash.
So
Matthew J said it. So I gotta shave it off.
No.
I don't know if you guys know this or not, but we have some really amazing sponsors now, and we gotta talk about them before we actually go super live with the main part of the show here. And Alex, if you're ready to go, we'd love to hear about some of these amazing sponsors.
You bet. Okay, well, the first sponsor is all about meat. And who doesn't love meat? Like all the dudes, obviously you love meat. It's a way of life, right? KC Cattle Company is a company that understands the power of decentralization and going direct from producer to consumer. They get Bitcoin. They're on Nostr. They're on Twitter. DM them. Tell them you heard about KCC on this podcast. Say hi. Get to know them. Portion of their sales goes towards helping vets and this pod specifically for those of you in our Bitcoin veterans chat groups. We've got a special discount code to buy beef from KCC. They will ship all over the United States of America. Contact us for details. Also, when you're checking out, add Bitcoin vets in the notes field at the checkout and you get a free gift of the world's best tasting Wagyu hot dogs, KCC cattlecompany.com. Also, shout out to Coleman, man. Well done. Way to come through. Also, us with Black Sheep Ammunition. This is a veteran-owned ammunition company. These guys are graciously providing us with ammo for our Nashville range day. You're going to be able to get their swag at the BV Citadel while supplies last. Come by and check us out at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville. Black Sheep Ammunition, a veteran-owned company manufacturing American-made goods for dedicated sportsmen and those ready to defend. Our mission is to supply every freedom-loving American with enough firepower to get the job done twice. Love it. This is the first time I've ever seen
it. You know, actually, I'll give you guys a pro tips with ammo. Weigh down your safes with ammunition. Pro tip. You know, nobody can walk away with a safe that's got, you know.
Wait, my safe's full of gold bars. What do you mean?
No. I sell those for Bitcoin, put the ammo in the safe, and then put the 24 words in the picture frame inside the wall.
There you go.
Thanks, Black Sheep, man. Big. I mean, that's a huge, to come through the way that these guys are coming through, man, what a great company. I'm excited. We're going to have these guys and apparently some of their swag at the Nashville conference. So yep. If you're coming around and you like this kind of stuff, come see us. You heard it on the show. Say, hey, where's that secret Black Sheep stuff? And we'll maybe hold that out for people that actually are here that are watching the show. Is hey, thanks for watching. You saw it here. And now, hey, here's an awesome t-shirt that you can go out there and spread the word about these guys.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, that's sweet. We got to get them accepting Bitcoin. That's next step.
Next step.
Yep. Easy. Will they be at the range day? Do we know?
I don't know if they're going to be at the range day, or we're just starting to talk to them about this stuff, and they've been really cool about it. My understanding is the owner is a supporter of Bitcoin, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, as this relationship progresses, maybe we'll help them figure out how to accept Bitcoin for their ammo.
Beards. So Bart, I guess, is a beard. Is that a special term for who you are, Bart? I don't get it.
Beards for Nashville. Beards they on for the ballot. Nashville. Is Nashville on the ballot somewhere? No, yeah, you should grow a beard for Nashville. You got a month, grow beards. Why not? That or some sort of like awesome mustache, for God's sakes.
Yeah, maybe wax it and curl it up. Way.
You don't want to twist though. Twisting puts tension on the hair. Like, what are they called? Where it touches your face. Anyway, I write code.
Follicles.
Wait, you guys?
Follicles?
You
guys is that what it is? Follicles. Yeah.
You guys do soap and wax and stuff? I haven't. Gel. I don't know. So
you're short Bitcoin if you're doing all that shit to your beard.
That is true.
It's true. Yeah.
But I do not recommend hair gel, by the way. If you're a young guy and you're doing all that hair gel stuff, don't do it. You're gonna end up like me and Shane.
That's what it was. Too much hair gel back in the day.
It was nice Bitcoin.
I just picture Shane and Alex both rocking the Joey Tribbiani, just like gelling up the tips so it stands up, you know, like everybody did back in fifth grade.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't know, Alex. It was hairspray and mousse and shit back in the 80s, man. Like, it wasn't that nice pomade stuff that you were doing. Somebody got out that fucking VO5 and was like, "Can you and they spray your hair absolutely stiff."
Back in the day, so we have now 1 minute. We have 1 minute before
happened.
So 1 minute before we officially start the show. So I'll just tell a quick story. I literally showed up to boot camp with a gigantic mullet. Like, this thing was like, yeah, it was a gigantic mullet. I'm in Florida, man. I grew up in Florida, so like mullets were a thing. That was full on real. And
checks out. What is?
Yeah.
Do you have a picture of this fabled mullet?
I don't. I'll see if I can find one.
Oh, dude, I would love to see that.
I had the Bon Jovi thing going on plus the mullet.
Oh my god,
like, all of it. Like, yeah.
I'm gonna when find I think my of Alex, third grade I think of
Bon Jovi. So.
My third grade picture, I have a Van Halen sweatshirt with cut off sleeves for my like my school picture. Glasses, yeah. Mullet. It is fantastic. If anybody knows Gwin Oaks Elementary over in Lawrenceville, Georgia, 1988, if you can find that, that is a gem.
So what's the show about tonight, guys?
Ooh.
Why are these dudes here?
Somebody come here. I don't know.
I just told me to show up here. I don't know. I just work.
Send me a link. Said click on the link. I just clicked it. Right. That's what you're supposed to do when you get a link from someone.
That's right.
I don't know. Like, I mean, the only thing I generally, the only reason I still talk, is because we're a long way from normal people treating sovereignty, private keys. You know, just the fundamentals, the not your keys, not your coin stuff. And I think a lot of that specifically relates to AI and the fraud that's going on. You know, it's all the way down to I'm seeing like local newscasters on my Facebook ads. Local newscasters here. The weather guy is like, you really should buy an Elon Musk new blah, 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 blah. Right? And you know, some guy thinks that, oh, that's Bobby, the weathercaster, but that's so I can buy into his AI thing or whatever, some investment platform. And ultimately, in a lot of the highest areas of different academia and different types of information sectors, it's coming down to an expectation of having to release your medical papers, your theses, et cetera, in person around other people in the space, because
interesting.
Just doing so online is not something that anyone can really trust anymore. It's getting to that point. And so private keys, ultimately, public private key management is a solution to those types of problems using the verified message services, using verified, you know, like key management. It's going to be a lot more nest. We're 25 years away from the education for normal people, but everyone are going to need to know it probably like this time next summer. It's coming a lot faster than people appreciate. So
right. Sounds like we're going to talk about the technical revolution.
Yeah. And why, you know, the beginning too, right? Why we're all here. Cause that's what matters still.
You guys, so
the number goes up.
Yeah. I think it's time. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're one of the ADIQ guys, take a knee, face outboard, provide security for these guys. Listen to as much as you can. It's about to go ballistic here. Hold on to your butts.
Have you been paying attention? There's a war going on. A war for your digital sovereignty. A war against digital slavery. There's one way out.
Yeah, Alex, just hold the perimeter back there. Thanks, dude. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. It's simple. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. We're on the mission for digital sovereignty using Bitcoin as the foundational layer of this. My name's Gary, and I'm here joined by Travis, a former detective specializing in cyber crime, blockchain analysis, and our very honored and special guest, and Alex Hillman, known as Bad Guy Scooter, Good Guy Biker, previously known as the Canadian Good Guy Biker. He's a cybersecurity expert, white hat hacker, long-term Bitcoiner, and from my understanding, a general just cheeky bastard. So let's get into it. Alex, welcome.
Hey, boys.
It's nice to be here, guys. Always love talking shop, you know, educating the Bitcoiners, making sure we all stay strong for the coming trying times.
Travis, welcome.
Hey guys, good to be here. Feeling bullish, guys. I'm feeling bullish on this freedom tech we got going on. Exciting things coming up.
Yeah, and before we kick that awesome intro, we were having a little discussion about really, I think the fundamental thing that Bitcoin has enabled, right? And it's not new necessarily. It started well before our lifetimes. And it's this idea of public key cryptography or public-private key cryptography, where you have these two numbers, a private key and a public key, and there's this special relationship between those two, where you get things. Hey, Natalie, how's it going? Got some shout outs in the crowd there from the little ones. Hey, Isla. Hey, Alex. But there's really, like, this started, I mean, a long, long decades ago at this point, where people started to understand that there was cryptographic relationships between numbers. And if you arrange these numbers in special formulas, they had these properties that would allow for things like encryption or digital signatures, right? So you could take some message, something you were doing. And if you, cryptography really goes back to some very, very simple ciphers, like our country was founded. And if you go to the National Cryptologic Museum up in Fort Meade, Baltimore, Maryland, area, they have like these old school ciphers. And I think even in like maybe like Thomas Jefferson's house or something like that. So the idea of like encoding and encrypting messages is nothing new, but the way that we've been able to do this in the digital world, in the digital realm, the efficiency that computers allow us to enact these encryptions using these magic numbers called cryptography has like accelerated humanity. And there's lots of writing on it, but I think that Bitcoin really is the first sort of killer app for cryptography in the sense that it has unlocked time for the people that care and the people that have the desire to build for freedom and build for sovereignty. It has enabled them to unlock time, right? There's all these theses out there. Bitcoin is time. Bitcoin is all these other things. But what happens when you have a money that cannot be debased, when you cannot be stolen from by the time thieves that debase our currencies and steal the productive capacity that you contribute to the society via inflation, and you have the time to focus and to pursue these goals and these means of digital sovereignty and understand what it means for private public key cryptography. Like, what does that even mean? There's a revolution going on, and it is technical and digital in nature, and it goes largely unseen by the mass populace. And so I hope that this evening, myself, Travis, and Alex can help bring some enlightenment to sort of maybe some underlying principles or fundamentals to the technology that enables this revolution. And I'll kick it over to Alex. Where did you start with cryptography?
Well, I'm very fortunate. I had access to computers generally before a lot of the populace. I wasn't as early as the punch cards, but my father had the first Motorola contract in Southern Ontario. My uncle got him all whiskeyed up one night and convinced him to sign the contract. And thank God he did. And because of that, I always had technology right at the very beginning, right from the bag phones, fax machines, playing Doom on 68-foot cable, parallel cables with, you know, a bunch of branches coming off and running through the roofs before Ethernet existed. All this wild stuff. And I always had, I guess you could call them mentors, young men in sales, technical skills, always teaching me things they shouldn't. And that was always fun, learning all those tricks and finding an interest when it's getting access to the internet. You know, I had the ability to learn everything, really troubled in school, just to tell teachers to F off all the time. You know, I was always getting detention for hacking the school computers. And finally, I found these communities online, these early communities. I was teaching myself computer languages, you know, learn Cubase in 12 days, learn C++ in 14 days. There were all these great books and resources. We would go into the IRC channels and we would set up bots, you know, and we would query all each other's servers and pull data and videos. And mostly it was technical resources and things of that nature at that time. As a young man, getting myself in lots of trouble, not knowing about encryption, you know, getting kicked off internet service providers, getting my dad in trouble because I was hacking everything, accidentally hacking the bank in my neighborhood. You know, that turned into a bad thing. And I never doing anything malicious as a young man. I guess maybe the most malicious thing was my involvement with PrankNet, the early days of that. And the other stuff would be, as a really young person, attacking new countries' websites when they would first come online, you know, and I would... They would get their website for the first time, right? You know, some African country or some, and I'd go in there and change the flag, you know, to LX Coolville, and, you know, I'd change the name and banners, and it was a vibe. But I had blinders on. I didn't have scope for what I was doing. We took down Yahoo for 2 weeks using a botnet of people that used a video game mod we created. And when I look back at that stuff, this is just after they had introduced Yahoo, had introduced stock trading, right? It was something that was reflecting back, millions of dollars was lost by that. And I just didn't have any idea. We crashed their main server. We crashed the backup server, and their third server was so slow. It was just like everybody was infinitely. We kept it down for weeks. And I feel so sick thinking about those things now. Jeez, I can't believe.
Well, people at Yahoo right now are scrambling to their phones. Calling 911. We found him finally.
Yeah. Oh, there's people there that probably talk about that, right? Because that was early days. These are the types of things you see with these video game companies and, you know, Sony and stuff being DDoSed off the internet at Christmas time. So people can't play, you know, Warcraft or Call of Duty. It's essentially the same kind of goofiness. And I would never involve myself with that kind of stuff nowadays. There's just no productive value in it. But after, I guess, getting in trouble, they used to come and say, and they always make the same jokes, these Canadian investigators here. They always come and they knock on the door and they say, "Hey, I'm C and this is my buddy Sis. Nice to meet you." Right. And, you know, and you go, "Oh shit, Sis is here. Oh God." Right. And they all think the same joke is really, really, really funny. But they go through all my shit. They take my computer. They give it back. Nothing happened. Right. I didn't steal money from the bank. I was just checking computers in the neighborhood, you know, not a big deal. So leave them alone. Thankfully. But I mean,
when he did it as a child, it sounds like, right?
Right. Because these days you see these hackers, normal people getting wrecked all the time. But you see some of the most sophisticated hackers in the world getting wrecked, caught because they clear net one time, because they make those mistakes even just once. And, people don't appreciate how much the mass surveillance net is and these social media companies and everybody else just spying on Ledger and everything, right? It's all data that they are selling. So this stuff is so important. And even the best hackers screw it up, right?
Well, because you only have to make a mistake once, right? Like, it's right. Things on the internet, you know, guys like Travis out there looking for people. It's just one thread to pull on and your entire digital identity can be unraveled at that point, because once you start connecting those dots, this is a fascinating thing in a previous life. Was I did a very similar thing of connecting metadata and social networks to tie it to specific entities in the real physical world. And it's all out there, and it's interesting because the protocols, they're designed, a lot of it is designed in a way where, hey, we just need to be able to bill. We just need to be able to send you a bill, right? Like your cell phone company. We just need to make sure that you're not roaming, right? When roaming was a big thing. Well, if we got to charge you X for roaming, we need to know where you're at. So we're going to know what, you know, we're going to track what cell towers you're on. And if you're on a cell tower two counties over, we're going to charge you roaming. But that same sort of desire to know what tower your cell phone's pinging off of is something that you can go look up on YouTube now about GSM hacking and these like rogue GSM stations and stuff like that. That same sort of thing enables you to find a device to capture devices and get data from devices. And a lot of people don't realize that, everybody carries around these devices in their pocket and it's a supercomputer and it's super awesome. But the amount of things coming out of this just constantly to the cloud, to Apple and Google and what have you, it's crazy. The world is very noisy. The digital world is very, very noisy. Travis, your perspective, what do you, go ahead.
Yeah, with these phones, they're a huge thing that investigators can leverage. And sometimes you're using that leverage to solve crimes that probably all of us agree should be solved, like homicides and stuff. But I mean, it's probably also used to track down protesters that meme too hard or something, right? But one of the points I used to illustrate to jurors, because I used to do the phone tracing. I was one of those guys. I would leverage like a lot of its engineering data. And so a lot of the data is just gathered and collected so that they can guarantee you the best cell phone service. And so they can hand your service off as you're traveling down the highway on a phone call and whatnot. And so a lot of it's that kind of data that's being analyzed but I would have to make the point to jurors and a judge and a district attorney that, I believe to a certain probability that this device was at a certain location and it's just a device, but we have to kind of make this next jump that someone's holding that device, and it's more likely than not that someone has that device. And the point I'd usually make is when you go to sleep at night, is your phone, like, where is your phone? It's probably the closest thing to your body. It's probably closer to your body than your spouse, and you're sleeping and it's sitting there that's its home right next to your body. It's probably closer than your spouse. And a lot of folks have to admit that's the case, right? It's on their nightstand next to them. And there's a lot of it's private companies gathering the information too, but a lot of that stuff's leveraged to pinpoint where people are. And you're technically pinpointing where the device is, but you are the device in a lot of sense.
It goes,
yeah.
It's way scarier than that. Just in the last year, Spencer and I, my business partner, have been doing a ton of forensics, and I've had people cold call me after they've been defrauded or while they're being defrauded, or, you know, girls coming to buy sneakers off me crying, I haven't told anyone I lost all my money. And I'm just like, where? And it's because they see my Bitcoin stuff, right? They see my videos on my Instagrams. So people just flow in. And the romance scams are so incredibly common now. People will have real life relationships with these people for over a year before they get you to send a bunch of Bitcoin or something to a website, and poof, apartment's empty, gone. And, you know, money is money. We can always get money back. But the idea of just like never being able to trust someone again, like, that scares the shit out of me. People, like, what? Single people today. Oh, my gosh.
When a lot of folks that get scammed with those kind of schemes, they're very, very embarrassed. And a lot of times it goes to a certain extent where they are, the victim themselves is reaching out to friends and family and getting more money, or they're mortgaging their own home, and or they are doing it all under without their spouse's knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so there's this real level of distrust. I mean, I've seen a lot of relationships and families get really damaged just because someone that was older and vulnerable, for example, not always the case, but I'm usually more sympathetic to them, just because they got scammed. I mean, it's pretty damaging. Beyond just the monetary loss.
I don't have the capacity to, like, we've had to help four different clients like with unexpected deaths in the space, right? And that's always really hard too. And I, because of my mind, I don't have the capacity to like want to help you feel sorry about it. I want to fix it. I want to move forward. I want to cancel all the the shitty, you know, you know, timeshares that he set up, you know, thinking he was a big shot. Now he got to close all these things, you know, make save the family, right? And sell a couple Bitcoin machines because there's no cash in the account because everything was crypto and it's all dog shit crypto, right? And you just have to. Fortunately, I have help with that, but I keep encountering these situations. And to Travis's point, you know, how do you represent these things? Law is something I've used beneficially for myself many times within the scope of, you know, the Canadian system here, both, you know, defending myself and you know, and going after at people after having been wronged. But it's hard to create information that doesn't make some soccer mom that thinks her phone is being hacked not sound crazy. Right. The amount of clients right now I have that are actually having their voicemails and phone calls redirected at a system level. And they're just in the stores, like reproducing this with the managers. I call my phone. It's not going to them. If I can prove these things, right, that's much easier for people. And most of the time, 5 years ago, 1 out of 10 people that came to me and said, I'm being spied on, I'm being stalked, I'm being tracked, I'm being boobied, whatever it is. 1 out of 10 actually had it going on here in Vancouver, Canada. And 100% of the time where those clients were being, in fact, tracked and had GPS trackers and had their phones infected and had listening devices put on their homes at the point of services outside and different things, 100% of the time they were involved with charity lotteries. They were involved with some kind of lottery that was a charity-based thing. And I never got the feeling that these people were nefarious or had nefarious intentions, but I just always assume there's some kind of cartel or underworld business here in Vancouver where they try to get leverage or they try to, you know, get over on these people. Hmm. Well, that's changed. 3 out of 5 people that contact me now that says they're being infected, they're being spied on, their phone's being messed with, that's in fact the case. And it's gotten to a point where the no click malware and the low level stuff is almost like rampant out in the world. And between these affiliate models where the software writers or the service providers are getting 80%, 85%, and the agents who are deploying the malware, who are attacking the victims, who are using these tools, are getting 15%. That is just rampant now. And that's a whole business model. That's any kid, you know, who was stealing Kias next week can be deploying SIM swapping techniques and zero click malware and all sorts of wild stuff.
Hmm. Well, I heard those kids are all on Minecraft servers, or they were. Did you catch the interview with June Seth?
Right, Minecraft just had a zero day.
Oh, did it?
Oh, yeah. You were able to break out of the sandbox and get full access to people's computers. And if they had crypto in their browsers or on their desktop or on their node or anything else of that nature, like that's yours now, let alone all the other malicious things you could do. So we created, the only things that really were around for this are like thousands of dollars. And so we took this thing called the cheap yellow display, which has got a Bluetooth chip and an ESP32 Wi-Fi adapter. And we adapted the Marauder set for it, which is something that a lot of the Wi-Fi hacking tools use. Mm-hmm. And then we specifically made it like a one-click interface that has all sorts of sniffers on it. So like evil portal sniffers and Panagachis and Deauth Attack sniffers and credit card skimmer sniffers, both Bluetooth and physical, right? So you could swipe them. And just an example, one of our clients took it to her apartment building where she's been having all sorts of crazy stuff going on. Mm-hmm. A couple of the former Wi-Fi networks were still being operated that shouldn't have been turned on. And what was happening is someone had spoofed the previous names of Wi-Fi networks in the building. And everyone's, when they switched over to the new system and when everyone's phones were automatically connecting to that Wi-Fi, you know, they had Fireside script turned on and different things. They were sweeping everyone's passwords and they were infecting computers. And everyone thought she was nuts. She took it downstairs to the guy with just the little machine with the list from the PCAP pings, right? And he goes, "What the fuck is that?" Right? Wait, those networks shouldn't be on. Right? She didn't even know what she was looking at. But the second someone that does, police officers, forensics, right, investigators, mm-hmm, lawyers, judges, juries, it's now quantifiable. And it's done in a legal way. Most of the things I do skirt the line. We use a lot of tool sets to do forensics, you know, through social media and nicknames, stuff like Project Sherlock and these different tools, which are all freely available, right? Just to scour the information on the internet and create profiles on these bad guys.
So to try to break down some of the things that you're just talking about, Alex, I want to interrupt you here. So when you're talking about sniffers, right? So these are devices. We have all these wireless devices, everything like Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, something called NFC, like when you tap to pay and stuff like that, that's called NFC, near field communication. But it's all these protocols where these radio waves are going all over the place, talking to everything. And because these protocols are all open, you can sort of tweak devices to listen to whatever's out there and report back what's on it. And Wi-Fi is one of the biggest.
Legally often too.
Legally. I mean, listening. It's like turning on a radio, right? Anybody can turn on a radio legally and listen for radio frequencies coming over the waves and ingest those. Now, when you're listening for specific types of radio frequencies, and then you're taking those and translating those into these protocols, that's how you get like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, right? And Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are actually part of the same standard. They're just like deviations of the same standard. But I say that to highlight that like all these devices and everything, it's all free open source. So a lot of it's free open source software that people are, you know, hacking out in the free time or professionally. But your phone, most likely, and I want to set this up when we're at the conference, it's called Kali Linux. It's like the hacker's version of Linux. It's got a whole suite of tools, but you can get an external Wi-Fi card. You can set it up in this sniffer mode that Alex was talking about.
Yeah,
and you can sit there.
Really good.
Yep. I've got an Alpha card.
The good ones. And the trick with Alphas is you turn their region into South Korea. This works with a lot of adapters because South Korea has far less stringent power regulations. You can really juice that and pump me up, but don't tell anyone I told you that.
Yeah, all these chips are regulated by like the FCC and stuff. So if you say you're somewhere else, if you hack the chip to tell it you're somewhere else, you can actually push out more power and have more range. This was something that I did in my time in the military was Wi-Fi. Like I hit an access point. I connected to somebody's Wi-Fi that I was not supposed to be over a mile away using a highly directional antenna. But the only reason we knew that Wi-Fi access point was there is because we could just sit there and listen. And if it's a Wi-Fi access point, like your Wi-Fi you connect to at home, that thing's always just blasting out. But your phone is even more culpable. When your phone's going around, like your home Wi-Fi, when it goes to like Gary's Wi-Fi, not my phone anymore because I've got a better device. But most people's phones, they want to connect to a Wi-Fi that they previously known. And they only look at the name. There's other information that kind of goes on behind the scenes, but they're only looking at the name of the Wi-Fi. So if you spin up something that says Gary's Wi-Fi and my dumb iPhone just goes, oh, here's Gary's Wi-Fi. There's no password. Let me connect to it. Right? Or maybe at work, you've got something. You ever been to like a hotel and you get the little like website login that's like, welcome to Marriott. You can download that, spoof it, and then reserve that. So you can stand up your own Wi-Fi that's named like Marriott Hotels and have a little web server running in the background that serves that up and says, hey, you need to log into your Marriott account in order to get access or whatever account you want.
Yeah.
And then the back end of that, you can just get usernames and passwords. And if you're really savvy, you can just you become a man in the middle, it's called. So like you're talking to the normal Wi-Fi, to them on Wi-Fi, and then the normal internet's over here and you're in between just passing messages, but you're listening the whole time.
Oh, Gary,
so that's called a man in the middle attack.
Right? You go to a website called Wiggle and you can figure this all out.
You can actually see where a lot of these are literally located.
You can literally prepare the names of the Wi-Fi networks, which you'd like to be spoofing. By just geographically searching those areas, because Wiggle has a wonderful collection of all the Wi-Fi data you'd possibly want. So have fun with
that. Yeah, it's called war driving. And it's an old thing they used to, especially in urban, like heavy urban, like New York City, San Fran, people would do war driving or just war walking or whatever. And you make chalk marks like on the wall outside of a building that you knew had internet access inside that was unencrypted or had an easily cracked password, right? Because there's some like previous sort of like Wi-Fi security protocols that you can crack in, you know, minutes with a modern computer. Those are really simple. If you're using something called WEP, if you've ever seen that and you're using that, please contact me. I will help you upgrade your Wi-Fi security.
Well, one thing to consider with all this that's kind of neat that some people might not know is one of the capabilities investigators can do with this kind of technology is If we, and for example, if I had responded to like a homicide and we didn't have it, like say any suspects, I would go to the area of the crime scene and I would look at my phone. I maybe have a couple different types of phones. And I would look and see what kind of Wi-Fi signals I can see in the area. And these are Wi-Fi signals that, you know, have password. They're password protected. Let's say all of them are, you know, it's not that big a deal, but I'll see the kind of activity in this area. Right. And then I will go and reach out and say, hey, judge, you know, more likely than not, if a suspect was in this area, you know, he probably had a phone. And if he has a phone, he's going to be handshaking with all these Wi-Fi networks. And, you know, Google or Apple, which whoever makes this phone, you know, in the United States, is going to be collecting this data, right? And there's also going to be a GPS on that phone. And there's also going to be, you know, other location information that those phone providers, phone manufacturers collecting on the phone. And so I want to do a warrant to, you know, say Google, and I want them to tell me all the devices that they are aware were in that particular area based on the information. And those are called geofence warrants. And they might be going away now. I've been out of law enforcement since last year, but you know, as of last year, we were doing them. So,
yeah.
And that, and pretty much everyone's phone is doing that. Like, unless you're really going out of your way to avoid certain services. and then if you're talking to cell networks, you know, you're probably not going to avoid that.
What do you got there, Alex?
Well, listen. So this whole thing we made, it's like a $35 screen anyone can overnight on Amazon, right? And it's using open source code, so you can do them yourself. It's called the Cheap Yellow Display. Google that with Marauder if you're interested in this. Really powerful. We're working on some with batteries. But this does not just the sniffing stuff. This will do all of the Marauder Wi-Fi, Evil Port, or, you know, Rickroll everybody, all the funny things. But to the point, if you really get just... You want to do, because the Flipper Zero is a lot of fun, if you guys are familiar with those, right?
Yeah.
The Android phones, you can do a lot. But the HackRFs, the Porta Packs, these are kind of like the end game as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, okay.
For the vast majority of the stuff.
Software-defined radio, right? So these radios will look at, like, your Wi-Fi antenna is like a very specific radio frequency, but they have these devices, they're called, you know, SDRs or software-defined radios, that they have a wide band of spectrum. They can do Wi-Fi and ham radio and all these other, like, the frequency range is much wider, and use software to kind of tell it where to look. But I'm curious, right? we had a request. We'll say that again.
You have to get the appropriate antennas when you want to hone in on different types of ranges, right? They're incredibly powerful. It's kind of like the end game for all this. And this is the kind of stuff that makes Bitcoiners sovereign and powerful, right? Is being able to analyze that stuff and interact. And
What do you tell a Bitcoiner, like new to Bitcoin, new to tech, like trying to understand this stuff? What do you tell them? Where do you tell them to start with this? How do you harden your digital identity? How do you harden your digital life to maintain that sovereignty?
Well, I think just acquiring skills, right? Learning and appreciating it. I always say security is an onion, right? And it makes you cry. And it's just how many layers deep you want to go. And you could have as many layers deep as you need for security. You could have a guy with a suit who brings you a suitcase with your 2FA inside of it, you know, and someone's got to read it in German to you. You can do whatever you want. But ultimately, it's about what's normal or what's reasonable for most people. And for most people, the first thing I would do is I would turn some form of two-factor authentication on most of their accounts, period. Now that's considering the cookie jacking, the instance jacking. You know, people can get those from your browser, and they can get into those exchanges usually for about 30 minutes without needing to do like the withdrawal keys and things. So that's something to keep in mind. But the 2FA is better than not having it. Having an understanding of what it is and having like a written down backup, so you can easily recover your 2FA later. Not signing into Google while you do your 2FA.
Not putting it in a cloud somewhere.
Exactly. That's the first step.
Or the hosting your own cloud. Right? Well, like self.
For most people.
What you want to do. Yeah.
Yeah. The second step would be self-sovereignty, would be private key management, right? So So going out and getting some kind of hardware wallet and understanding it, learning it, appreciating it as a superpower, you know, the fact that normal individuals have secure enclaves and are interacting with this type of one-way encryption, it's beautiful to me, but they still screw it up. So just appreciate what you're doing. Store your coins yourself. That's it. Get them out of any services, any smart contracts, any websites. Get them off your computer, and get them into something where it's cold storage. And then finally, if I could go all the way back when I got those first Bitcoins for $3 and $7, or when I sold them all for $440, never had that many Bitcoins.
Don't bring it up.
Yeah. Oh, Christ. What I would do differently is I would buy more Bitcoins right now and I would not tell anybody. That's it. I think the biggest mistake is too many people are forward facing, and people who used to roll drug houses and bad guys, all this customer data, these exchanges go down, the Shopify accounts get hacked. Eventually they're going to look through these accounts and see that you've withdrawn X amount from, you know, Coinbase or some database that's been leaked. And they'll say, well, there's probably $3 million in relatively untraceable money, pseudo-anonymous, right? It'll be one smart kid in the crew. Pseudo-anonymous Bitcoin, guys, let's go get it, right? They're going to do the $5 wrench attack, which at that point will probably be $38 because of inflation. Well,
don't forget your physical security, too.
Right.
Please speak more to that.
I mean, staying just a physical threat. Like yourself, you're especially, and no offense to the ladies out there, you're more than welcome to become a physical threat. But to the dudes out there, and especially the veterans out there, if you've gotten soft after getting out because you don't have the time or you don't have the energy, find the time, make the time, and muster up the energy to get into the suck again and get in physical shape. Because, you know, if you're looking at, you know, somebody that looks like they go to the gym versus somebody that looks like they don't go to the gym and you want a $5 wrench attack, like, please bring a $5 wrench at me, because it will not end well for you. It might not end well for me too, but I guarantee you, like, both of us are going to exit that in a state worse than what we started. I think that's the first sort of like baseline for physical security. But the second is kind of understanding, like you said, Alex, these Bitcoin keys, like, you know, what is it, right? It's this data, it's this number. And you can store it on your phone, you can store it on your computer, but there's problems with those, right? Those are insecure. Those are touching the internet. If anything touches the internet, it is an attack surface, right? So for the veterans out there, if you're imagining you're trying to guard a wide open field, right? Like, that's your browser, right? You're trying to guard from a 360 perimeter, and it's a wide open field that anybody can come at you from any angle. Now you take that down to an air-gapped hardware signing device, like a cold card or a Trezor or a seed signer or any of these sort of like devices that are designed to operate offline to hold your keys in a secure manner. That now you're taking that wide open field and you've got like a hallway, right? Like you can see and predict the attack surface of what's coming at you, right? If you have that cold card, that physical cold card, or those 12 words written down on a piece of paper or stamped in a seal, whatever, however you want to do that, however you want to store that, right? They make all kinds of gizmos. You can punch it into washers. There's fancy things where it's like a little like slider, whatever. By the way, you can't destroy steel, right? So like, that's really hard to dispose of in an emergency situation. But all these things, you can know where the physical item is. And then you can get into more advanced setups of like multi-signature setups where you need two keys out of three to even get access to your coins. And that's really inconvenient depending on how you set that up. Because if you keep two of the three keys in your house together, that it's the same as just having one key. So you might as well not do it. But if you take one of those two other keys and you have one in your house, you put one at your mom's house, you put one in a safe deposit box, you put one under a rock at your favorite place in the park, whatever it might be, whatever makes sense to you, whatever you think is the most secure, then somebody comes at a $5 wrench attack to your house, you're like, hey dude, I've got, you know, a million sats on my phone because like I just, you know, withdrew, or I was shit posting on Noster and I made a bunch of money, so like, here, you can have these, but you're not getting my stack.
And before anyone listening's head starts to spin, because I wake up in cold sweats all the time from conversations I've had on Twitter spaces and Clubhouse where people message me like 8 months later and they're like, I was listening to you guys talk about multisig and I've been dollar cost averaging to a wallet that was still in my account that I don't have the private keys for anymore. And I'm just $68,000 of Bitcoin deleted. And I wake up in cold sweats thinking about this woman all the time. Like, Jesus, I got to be careful what I say. And I think that's the other side of this is so many people screw up going too far. Like all this, people just get so like, I'm going to put it in a book and I'm going to split the words up or I'm going to get a piece of steel with washers and moving parts. Like, that's a good fucking idea. Just get a piece of steel and a letter punch kit from the hardware store or Amazon. Write your words on a piece of steel, word by word. And here's the pro tip. Instead of doing literally word by word with the, you just take the bit and you hammer it, you do all the A's and then you do all the B's. Jesus, that will turn a 48-minute marathon into like a 50-minute slam session. A, B, 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 B. Now you got a piece of metal, bury it in the wall, put it in the garden, preferably under some cement. I wrap duct tape around them a whole roll so that no matter what kind of mindset I'm in, because I've had a lot of concussions, you know, we all get tricked. Shit happens. And that's another thing people don't appreciate. We can all get tricked, right? One of our clients sent $2.4 million to a scammer the week that her brother and her brother-in-law died. She was emotionally vulnerable. She had been in the space since 2016. And just they had been around her for many months and eventually she was vulnerable. And they will screw up your life to make you vulnerable. But yeah, don't overcomplicate your process. Don't separate your words, right? Don't use multisig unless you're physically at some kind of risk, right? Most of these things don't apply. Getting it into a set of 24 words and then getting a second hardware wallet, learning about a 25th word, right? Maybe a password. Learning about some decoy wallet techniques, learning about how, like the cold card, you can press certain sequences and it'll become a decoy wallet, right? Learn about making sure that your family and other people you love can recover these things entirely without you around to help, right? Don't overcomplicate, please, Christ. No multisig, no Shamir, none of that stuff. Jeez, don't do that stuff, guys. Please, for your grandkids, don't overcomplicate your storage. 24 words. Well, both are fine. 12 words or 24 words to the chat.
Both are fine.
But 12 words will be hacked before 24 words. So if quantum computers, boogeyman, all that crap is real, we would start to see those attacked before we saw the other ones, in my opinion. So 24 words has more entropy. It's a similar technique, right? But I think it's a better idea. Again, I could talk about how the first four letters are what's used and that would just start confusing everyone. So
don't need to go into that. Basically those simple words though, like these words, we'll explain it like you're five, Alex. The words are, again, like we talked about these like sequences of numbers and stuff like that. Words can be translated into numbers for computers, right? Like that's how, you know, Gary K on the screen here is showing up. Well, that's actually pixels on your screen. Anyway, there's a way of encoding words using like binary data. And so those 12, 24 words is a string of characters that get turned into this binary data that is the key, right? Like the binary data is the key itself. And the words are just a way to go from something that's human legible, something that we can all read, share, memorize, you know, you know, your kids can understand it at a certain point. And you can take that and derive it into this private key. It's one of the more like, it wasn't always this way. Like Alex, you want to talk about like the time in Bitcoin before we had, you know, BIP39 seed words?
I try not to talk too much about early Bitcoin, but let me just say that we had a whole metal bin full of, private keys written down on paper. And the idea that these guys can buy all their meme tokens and all their shit coins and all their Bitcoins derived from the same private key on every different system, and you can use it for your FIDO and for your 2FA and for different types of things now as well, blows my mind from hundreds of pieces of paper in a little metal box to a single set of words on a piece of metal saved in two spots.
It's pretty cool.
And that goes into like you have these 12 or 24 words, right? And it goes into this string of numbers that are your private key. And then the savants of the Bitcoin community have figured out a way of doing something that's called like a deterministic wallet, where you can do these functions to this private key. And it's sort of like, imagine like a tree, right? So like if I told you you're in a hotel and I say, hey, your room's 305, you know that you have to go to either the stairs or the elevator, right? And ideally, like it's just one, right? So we just have a stair in this elevator, in this hotel. You go to the stairs. So I know like I have to go that path. I have to go up three floors and then I have to go down to the right, you know, five doors to get there. And that's how like these Bitcoin keys and addresses and stuff, like it's this deterministic path that you sort of have to save alongside of it. But a lot of the software abstracts that away for you. It does it for you. It knows that, okay, we're going to start with zero and we're going to go to one and then we're going to go to two. And that's sort of like goes, there's a flow, there's a deterministic way. So that way there's logic you can build around these things and remember.
It's so important too, because Bitcoin is pseudo-anonymous, right? So we're talking about sovereignty and private keys, and it's one way, right? So you can't have all the public keys and get the private key. It's derived from the public of the private key. Everything goes down, so mm-hmm. it can't be reversed. This is very clever, right? But what you're speaking to, the derivation side of things, is really a beautiful part that Satoshi had envisioned originally. The idea that you've got 2.4 million Bitcoin addresses, roughly, when you create a private key, 2.4 million unique addresses that you can use that individuals, entities, corporations, and businesses can't link to each other, right? This is incredible. And so, you know, you've got Ethereum where they're trying to use like your address as your digital identity, which is not beneficial for privacy or sovereignty, these types of things. Where Bitcoin, every time you hit send me Bitcoin, 99% of the tools out there will give you a brand new address. And you've so the tree in the forest, you've got a forest full of trees that you can store your Bitcoin in inside your private key, and your derivation determines the path through that forest. But again, don't screw with this stuff, because the likelihood of your family being able to find the tree where you hid your Bitcoin without you making very clear instructions after having deviated from the standard is just, again, I'm waking up in cold sweats having just said it out loud, right? Like
more geez. Money, more Bitcoin has probably been lost to something like that, where somebody does a clever, like I'm going to create some schema to like back up my seed phrase. And it's going to go in like these five different pictures and this, that, and the other, and they get hit by a fucking bus and they're dead. And their wife's crying, 'cause they're like, oh, we had thousands of Bitcoin and I don't know what's, and they're gone. They're gone because you cannot recreate that seed. Maybe somebody in the far distant future accidentally recreates your seed, right? Like that's a beautiful thing I have in my mind, is like one day some kid out there is going to like generate a seed and it's going to be Satoshi's wallet, just because it's a non-zero probability, but it's like so infinitesimally small. It's unlikely to ever happen. I'm going to stop us right here though, because we're going to talk about Nashville. Nashville 2024, Bitcoin Conference 2024, Bitcoin veterans are locking down a 3,000 square foot room called the Bitcoin Veterans Citadel. We're going to have a stage. We're going to have a lounge area. We're going to have exhibit booths set up. And we're going to have my favorite, some workshops, some technical workshops. The fellas that usually run this thing gave me some free range. And I don't know if they're ready for it, because I basically just recruited a bunch of nerds to come hang out in the Citadel and teach us some stuff. One of those nerds is Travis. He's going to be doing a surveil yourself on chain, right? Talking how you can go through these, like, look at the blockchain itself and learn where your address, like where the money came from that you have, and how that can be traced back to you or somebody else. And just like how you can look at your blockchain identity, I guess, your UTXO set, and like what that means. For anybody that doesn't obla, UTXO is a Bitcoin transaction, unspent transaction output. It is like the ledger accounting that is your Bitcoin. But we're going to do a contingency working group led by Bill Stebbins. He's on an older episode. Go check him out. Talking about like what could possibly threaten Bitcoin, right? Let's go through that. And if you know anything about the military, we're really good at going through contingency plans. What can break this? What can screw this thing up? Let's hash this out. Let's sand table this. Let's whiteboard this. We're going to be having Start 9. They're going to come out. They're going to do just a brief tutorial on like how to get set up with Start 9. We're going to have a ham radio license exam. If you're interested in that, we need your information by the end of this week, because we're going to be pushing out information to those that are going to get qualified. We're going to get dudes on the airwaves. Ham radio, as much as you might think like, oh man, you got to get the government license and everything like that, it's like a firearm. You don't just go around shooting your firearm everywhere to practice, right? You kind of have to fall within the lanes of society. But when if society ever goes to shit, you don't have to fall within those lanes anyway more, right? And ham radio is going to be a crucial aspect to anything in a disaster scenario. You talk to anybody that's been in, you know, Hurricane Katrina, any kind of disaster, there were ham radio dudes on the ground providing communication in and out, right? And if that doesn't appeal to you as a veteran, you know, go talk to some of your buddies, because it might appeal to them. We get trained on radio comms. It's something we can bring to the community. And it's something that I think that Bitcoiners should learn, because it is a decentralized form of communication. Yes, it's very easily to locate where you are when you're broadcasting, but nobody can stop you from broadcasting. If you have a radio and you have the appropriate software and the antenna and the power to do it, you can key up that mic and send those airwaves out into the ether for somebody else to pick up, right? Learning that, studying that, being proficient in that. We're going to have a Meshtastic workshop. If you're not familiar with Meshtastic, you don't need a license for it, right? It's these little devices that they're just like this. Right? Little devices that you can fit just in a back pocket or in some sort of like enclosure with solar power, very low power, and they all talk to each other. Mesh means it's all like all the devices talk to each other. Very low bandwidth. You're not going to be streaming video on it, but you'll be able to talk between each other. And there are pockets of these radios popping up all over the US, all over the world, really, where they're setting up these sort of redundant infrastructure of comms. We've also got one of my buddies is coming in to talk about a Outline VPN, how you can get set up with that. It's self-hostable, right? He's an Army veteran. We've got HODL Up by Scott Lindberg, not necessarily technical, but if you are new to Bitcoin and you want to know how Bitcoin functions, HODL Up is one of the best ways to learn it. It is true to the like functionality of Bitcoin, but it simplifies it down into a game mechanics that's fun for everybody. We're also going to have an Ethernet making course, right? So if you don't know how to like make cables, that's a very basic skill. We've got one of our Bitcoin veterans going to do that. We're going to be talking about BitAx, right? We're going to have a presentation on BitAx. We're going to have a stage with all kinds of different discussions. So come out and join us at the Bitcoin Veteran Citadel in Nashville, July 25th through the 27th. And if you're lucky enough, you can get in on the Bitcoin Veterans Range Day, which that's going to be on Industry Day. That's the first day of like the conference necessarily, July 25th. Come out and shoot guns. We're getting 6,000 rounds of ammo from sponsor, and we're going to have a hell of a time. So get in contact with us. We've got discount codes for that. And I don't know what the normal shill is, but we got like discount codes for like all the conferences and everything like that. So I'll let the guys yell at me later and they can shill that at the end of the show. But let's get back to the technical discussions, eh?
Yeah, I've got my local area that's very passionate about the mesh stuff, and I don't have any experience with it, but we'll get you one. Yeah, we're going to try to do a workshop, like a Skillshare in our local area here on that topic and have him teach the locals. But it sounds cool. It sounds really, sounds like right up my alley. I just have never.
It's a way, you know, Meshtastic, like it's encrypted. You can set up encrypted channels. That's another thing. Ham radio, you're not allowed to have encrypted channels. You have to have like a business license and certain spectrum and stuff. But Meshtastic, you can set up encrypted comms channels. So that way you're the only people talking to each other. I want to get it just for my neighborhood, right? Like they've got these little devices that are, looks like a little BlackBerry, right? With a little screen on it and everything.
Right.
But if I hand that to my kid, I know that they're not going to be on the internet talking to some random weirdo, right? Lock it down to a specific channel, set up with a specific private key for the encryption that only the people in the neighborhood know. That way, you know, they can talk to their friends three houses down and I don't have to worry about some predator, you know, talking right to them online.
That's interesting.
It's funny you mentioned the Meshtastic. Part of like being a professional hobbyist now that we're reaching the other side of like business and Bitcoin and all that stuff, finding a lot of time for ourselves. I've been building a crap ton of Meshtastics. We've been supplying them to all our red teams abroad, and they've been using them for private communication, you know, when they're, you know, I guess you would call it on scene. right? Like in the Emirates and things, it's a good way to just bypass a lot of that. I've been mapping out. There's a really cool thing called Turbo Overpass Turbo, and Overpass Turbo is essentially a collection of all of the databases, the infrastructure, the municipal information, all the different layers of data that's out there. And I've been using it in ChatGPT to write code for it because it has its own specific code. I say, hey, ChatGPT, find me street lights and pathway lights in these areas that have solar panels. And it will direct me. It pings all these maps. It pings them all on my Google map for me. And I get on my e-bike late at night. And I take a little belt and a little special pair of shoes, and I shimmy, 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 and I snip, 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 and I clip, clip, clip. And I've been installing these things into any of the lights here in Vancouver that have, because the solar panel lights have batteries inside of them, right? So you've got that additional redundancy if there's extended power outs, which is what I'm kind of like more interested in. And I got the guys at the gun shop them. I've got one of my buddies who makes ammunition them, right? I've got a bunch of the guys on my IPS that do IPSEC with the speed shooting and, the John Wick LARPing and all the fun stuff we do.
It runs on something like this small. This is like that BlackBerry device I was saying. This battery, it's a 1500 milliamp battery, but like this will run one of those other small devices for a long time because the biggest consumer of your energy is your screen. Like your phone battery kills itself when it's either like on Twitter spaces or whatever you're doing or scrolling the gram, but it's your screen that's lighting up all the time. Because these things have very, very low power screens, they can run for a long time. And there's dudes out there that make waterproof enclosures with a little solar array on it that is enough to charge one of these little batteries in the day. And then at night, it's still up and running the whole time or in cloudy weather. Yeah, you can slap extra antennas on there. But it is a way to do, again, sort of decentralized communications. It is a parallel infrastructure to your normal devices, right? Your normal device, it wasn't too long. I think it was at the beginning of the year. You had like the Eastern Seaboard had like the entire, like the cell network went down for like the entire like southern portion of the Eastern Seaboard or something like that. I can't remember exactly when it was. But at that time, what do? Like most people can't even navigate to the grocery store anymore without, Google Maps telling them which way to go, let alone figure out what the hell's going on. If you got people in your area, like your gun shop owners, your veterans, anything like that, people that you care about, your family, right? You can give these devices to them. And if you're squirrely like Alex, you can go set them along all the streetlights, or you can find places to put these up on, mountain ridges or high points, right? To broadcast that signal out. Alex, I wanted to pivot the conversation a little bit away. You mentioned that you're using ChatGPT for that. Let's pull on that AI thread and let's talk about the relationship between AI and private public key cryptography.
Yeah, so I'll start off this private public key thing, and I'll say Spencer and I, we sat with the Canadian government here on several different occasions and spoke about public private key management as a solution to solving the $13 to $14 million Canadian taxpayers spend a year unlocking and resetting Canadians' business, tax, government service accounts, right? Any of those types of things. They call customer service. We spend $13, $14 million a year resetting those. And their idea was that private key, public key systems really solves a lot of this. Use your private key to sign a mortgage, use your public key to prove your identity, reset your passwords, etc. And we agreed, but they came to a very specific understanding. They said, private key, public key encryption, education is no different than littering here in Canada. We had to introduce this education in the early 90s to public school systems. And it took 25 years to curb littering in Canada. And they broke down, they had very interesting information about this, broke down all the statistics, and basically said that the problem with public and private key management for normal citizens, they'll screw it up. They'll give it to some scammer, or they'll give it to their nephew. And now how we reset a private key, how do we have the ability to manipulate that database? Well, then that defeats the purpose of it. Now we've got centralized entities who can change those things, and that's going to be corrupted. So they love the idea of using this, even in just government, for citizens, for identification purposes. Just they are intending now to initiate a 25-year education program for that. But I think that's not fast enough. Right. Yeah. All us Bitcoiners are blessed that we've learned this technology. We've got these secure enclaves. We've got public and private key understanding. But the artificial intelligence, the misrepresentation of individuals, businesses, investment opportunities, anything at all of this nature, it's going to come faster than most people can appreciate. And there is still a lot of older people and ignorant people and less informed people, less technical people who are still in places of power, who are still running giant businesses, who still have access to large sums of money, who can do one thing, sign one thing, click one thing, and destroy their family's life, change it forever. And the artificial intelligence is coming to a point now where, you know, I'm actually seeing the local newscasters, the people who do the weather, the local news teams, artificially generated videos of them, you know, and I'm a little more familiar with it. I can see the mouths don't look quite right, but it sounds pretty damn good. And it looks pretty reasonable. If you're not looking at a high resolution TV, for example, maybe you're a little older, your vision's a little impaired, your hearing's not as good, your thinking's not as sound. You're just less technically familiar. You think your local newscast weatherman is telling you to invest in some kind of bullshit Tesla investment opportunity, some AI arbitrage Tesla thing. And I'm seeing so many people fall victim to it. And they're attacking. It's going all the way down to your local communities, your local newscasters, your celebrities, your friends and family are around the corner telling you to invest in some kind of bullshit. Hey, mom, I need some money. I'm in jail. You know,
I think that brings back, I hope is it brings back more human to human, peer to peer interaction in the physical world. Right. And that's why I'm a huge fan. I run my meetup here in the Northern Shenandoah Valley, Shenandoah Bitcoin Club. If you ever want to come out, we're meeting this Saturday, 10 a.m. downtown Winchester. But one of the reasons I love that is because I get to go have face-to-face time with the people in my community, right? I go to small business meetups. We go to church on Sunday. I think people have lost a lot of that. You know, the lockdowns like decimated a lot of that. It made a lot of people fearful of that thing. But with AI on the verge of what it is and really accelerating in these ways that you're talking about, Alex, like it's going to be more important than ever to go ask your cousin, hey, did you like shill me this like, you know, Tesla AI arbitrage thing? And your cousin can be like, what the hell are you talking about? And you can be like, oh, well, let's have a beer and talk about it and talk about how crazy the world is. So it's almost this way where the internet is becoming these centralized ways, right? And you talk about like the older people controlling vast sums of money, right? On the Twitter platform or X shitter, whatever you want to call it, Elon Musk or anybody at that company could literally take a elected officials or some like world leaders account and make it tweet whatever it wants, right? And there's no way for the layperson or even somebody that doesn't have access to those systems to know that it didn't come from that person, right? But these public private key cryptography mechanisms, and again, like Bitcoin has created this renaissance where one, there's the motivation to really like understand these things. There's all kinds of crazy cryptographic schemas going on where you can have, I won't go into it to go too far over people's heads, but you know, these schemas and stuff, like they came about, they existed, but they came about now. There's a huge motive for everybody to go out there, break them, figure out what's wrong with them, use them, make it easier to use, right? So your local community, your local Bitcoin meetup, if you're the technical person and you're not attending that meetup, please go attend that meetup. Go there because people will have questions. People coming to look to Bitcoin and just in general to technical people in the world, right? If the world goes where Mike Hobart thinks it's going to go, to doom and gloom, right? People are going to be looking for a source of light, I think Bitcoin provides that light. And I think that Bitcoiners in a community setting can provide a strong signal of that light. Like, hey, we're here. We're having fun still because our purchasing power isn't being debased. Come join us. Learn from us. Let me show you the way. Public-private key cryptography. Like, what does this mean? Like, I don't know. Okay, let's start with this, right? Let's create a wallet. Let's get your 12 or 24 words on your phone. Let's send you 100,000 sats, and then let's nuke the whole thing and reset it back up to get people used to these concepts, to these ideas, and then take it a step further. I don't know, Alex, have you dabbled in Nostr at all? Are you familiar with Nostr?
Yeah, so my favorite part of Nostr, probably my favorite part, is when personalities from Twitter who don't understand public-private key management create a Nostr account and then publicly share their private key. For Always love that one. Haven't been using my own account on there, but I've definitely posted a few funny ones after a few private messages to some personalities on Twitter. So that's always great. That's fun. Yeah. Right? Back to the whole not knowing what the fuck most people know what they're doing.
Right.
And that's, I think, a user thing, right?
Yeah.
So advocate a Tor, advocate a PGP, heavy IRC user. Like I'm a big privacy guy. But in the last 25, I was a Cisco engineer and I always got off. I break shit coins. I hack all the physical wallets as much as I can, right? Like this is what we have to do. If you can bend a system then possibly break it, why the heck are you investing in it, right? So I just that's that cypherpunk mindset is bend it until it breaks. And obviously you shouldn't buy it. That's so important. And people don't get that anymore. Attack everything. Fuck. Attack what everything. Are the ways, everybody.
Yeah. What are the ways, attack Travis, what are the ways that you're seeing people attack these systems, right? Like what's the cleverest hack? What's the most common hack? Like what is the way that people are really suffering from being exploited of their ignorance of technology?
So what I'll say is that encryption is empowering us to protect. It allows us to protect our money, right? And it allows us to secure our money. I mean, it's like my cold storage, allegedly I have cold storage Bitcoin, right? And it's like, it's the same feeling. It gives me the same feeling as having like a pantry of like a year's worth of food. Like it's just nice. This cold storage Bitcoin, I mean, it's secure. It can't be seized without someone obtaining that private key or that seed phrase. And so that, you know, there's some power there and there's some freedom and some sovereignty with that. But because of that, because it's so strong, there's really no take backs or no customer service can help you if you lose that private key, if you share that private key information, right? And it's the same thing with Nostr. So Nostr, you know, uses public private key cryptography as well. And that allows you to sort of secure your identity online. Your social media profiles, for example, is how it's mainly used. And it's great. You can control it. You can secure it yourself. But if you lose that security, if you share that private key, then you're pwned, right? There's no take backs. And so it's sort of an extreme version of how to use money, how to use online identity. And so with that, to answer your question, people share their private key or they send their funds all the time. And they do that by making some sort of mistake, right? They're storing their private key in some stupid way. And maybe they just didn't have enough education and they YOLO'd their life savings into it before they were really ready. Or a lot of people are just conned. I've talked to so many people. Like, I'm not a detective anymore, but I work in the Bitcoin space. I interact with folks that get scammed. You know, I advertise that I will help folks when I, you know, if I can, because I do feel sorry for folks that get scammed, right? And it's pretty easy for me to like do a quick trace or something and help them or connect them with someone that might help them. And I chat with people every week easily. That they get scammed, and there's some smart people that fall for it. And I think Alex mentioned like there's different types of vulnerable folks out there. Maybe it's just like a temporary vulnerability, like a loss of a family member, or you're just old. You just don't have all your faculties anymore. And you're like a nice old Christian lady that's just very trustworthy. And you believe the person that called you is who they claim to be. So that's to answer your question. Is like, people pwn themselves all the time by just giving away their funds, giving away their private key. They'll get exploited by greed and by fear. So they think their Bitcoin is unsafe and they have to secure it. They end up sending it to someone that they believe is helping them, or they think they have an opportunity to make a lot of money, and they're just being greedy and they're not being smart about it. And they're buying Bitcoin and sending it to a fake exchange. That's a fake website that shows them fake gains, right? So that's pretty common to see in the space.
And they show you the money and then they say, oh, you got to pay tax if you want to get your money. So then they get you for more. They get you to send more in to, if you get your money out, or they say you got to do some KYC thing. But just imagine this. Imagine that you're Karen and you're 86 and you like knitting and, you know, kitty cats, and you do the water aerobics with all your friends every weekend. And you have a house phone, you know, like a big old one you could really knock someone out with if they came in, you know, and they get a big cord on it, it's hanging on the wall. It's been there for probably 55 years, still works because they used to make things that last. And when she got that phone, that thing was serious. People didn't mess around with phones. When people called you, it was your family, it was your friends, it was your loved ones, it was your bank. People didn't dick around on phones like they do these days. And so these things have always represented something very serious, something in like endearing, right? This is how I talk to my family. This is how I get information. This is how I found out my sister died. This is all that stuff. It's this emotional object. And now you got some guy calling, telling them you need to use iTunes gift cards, or their nephew's going to jail, or they're going to get arrested for taxes. You know, they don't understand that people are dicking around on phones now, right? These are sacred objects for people like this.
Scary stuff. I think the solution, well, maybe not the solution, a solution, is if you're comfortable with it, if you understand the basics of this technology and you have people in your life, in your community that are interested, you know, if they know you're the Bitcoiner, right? Like there's some people in my local community that I've gotten questions, I've gotten texts, I've gotten calls of like, hey, like this Bitcoin stuff, like, you know, tell me about it. If you're a good community member, if you're a good member of your local society and community, people can look to you for help, right? And I think that's probably the best way we can help this older generation, is being good community members and being stewards of good information. But aside from that, yeah, it's going to be a lot of pain and lessons learned. But there is a light to this.
We're seeing
and
a lot of
not necessarily to the story, but there's a light to this show, and it's called Story Time. And we're about that time right now. Alex, did you get briefed on this? Are you aware of what's going on? Yeah. No, you haven't heard. So
Alex reminded me of a story, but if he has a story, he should go first.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. So Alex, we want to hear a story from you. Something with levity, something that will make us laugh, right? In the veteran space, remembering the bad times is sometimes some of the best times you have with your buddies, because you can remember how much it sucked. It could be a story like that. It could be a funny story. But something lighthearted, something to cap off this doom and gloom of everybody's ignorant, knows nothing about tech. What are we going to do? So tell me a funny story.
Well, I don't know. I used to walk into warehouse buildings for fun and see if I could walk all the way into the offices and put my hands in all the folders and filing cabinets. And I would always ask, hey, where's Jimmy, or where's the Don? Or they'd correct me, and then I'd know whose name I'm looking for. But don't do stuff like that. But this one time we were working the billionaire party at the Shaw building here in Vancouver. And I've dodged a few silver bullets in my life, you know, walking that fine edge, you know, recently heavily investigated for auto crimes. They determined I wasn't stealing cars. I was just fucking with people's Teslas, right? So that they left me alone. C and his buddy Sis came by and we'd had the conversation, but it's okay. But there's this billionaire party. They do all sorts of weird sex stuff in this nice building downtown. They all come from the U.S. and they take over two floors of this. It's just a commercial building. And we
wait, is this
up
a movie? Is this
No. This happens right every year. It's the billionaire party at the Shaw building. And we set up like 300K worth of lights and like electrical, just like, and like little stages everywhere. I've never been to the party. I don't get to actually come, but I mean, it's weird as fuck. And I had the keys. We were turning off Floor's power so we could install these, all these different musics and stages and light systems and different stuff. And there was a temp agency from the U.S. that had a bunch of employees that were here. They had the contract because it was American billionaires working in Canada. I was kind of a liaison to a certain capacity, as had been in the past. And I made the mistake of using one of my new cards instead of the card they gave me to tap through a couple security doors in the basement. And then I ended the video on my Twitter, put my hand on the master power thrower of the building. I thought that was funny. I legally was down there throwing switches. But it was fine until one particular person took it the wrong way. And it resulted, long or the short, in $68,000 of, I guess, contractors from the U.S. not getting paid. And for whatever reason, me being the only person that wasn't financially, legally, or reputationally affected by this incident. So that was a fun one. You know, it's fun to be the white hat. It's fun to fuck around. It's fun to post these videos. You know, I still mine Monero on every digital billboard I find, you know, like 100%. We're putting it, you know, mine until that thing resets and says it's too hot. I think that's funny, but be careful what you do. Because I've been lucky too many times, and not everybody is always going to get as lucky as me in situations like that.
Have you been punched in the face yet? Like, have you gotten to that point where somebody's punched
that's
in the face?
That's prison. We can't talk about that today. That's
got
a whole
it.
Other
got
story
it. All right.
The next one. I ain't going back there, though.
Travis, did you have a story you wanted to share?
Yeah, man. I got a story. I always have stories. All right. So... Alex, you inspired this story because you mentioned people being convinced to give away funds in the form of gift cards. And so this is a story about gift cards. So there I was a detective. I was investigating. Someone calls in and they're like, hey, I just got scammed. I messed up. I just sent like $500 in gift cards to this bad guy. And it's already too late. They've already, you know, cashed the gift card, already used it. So I look into this, and long story short, like I dig into this because this kind of case involves getting a phone call. You get a phone call and they're pretending to be a cop. And this was an interesting case because it was the suspect's voice was like an African-American male American accent, like from the South. And I was not expecting that. Usually these cases are like foreigners from India, Nigeria, and they sound foreign. Right. And my American victims tell me that. But this time it's like, no, this guy was from the South and he sounded like a black guy. And that led them to believe him more because he did not sound like a normal scammer. And he introduced himself as a cop, as, you know, Sergeant so-and-so with their local agency. And he tells them that they have a warrant out for their arrest because they didn't show up for like jury duty. And these guys will target people that have professional licenses, like doctors, therapists, that kind of stuff. And so a lot of their information is online with associations, with the licensing agencies, right? So a lot of their PII is already out there by design. And so you can imagine these victims are afraid of losing their licensing now because I'm like a fucking psychologist. I can't go to jail. Are you kidding me? And so they will just fall for this. And they're very smart people, but they fall for it. They get that fear element going. And, you know, you can pay this. It doesn't make any sense. But this is not how the system works. But they convince them to pay the bail in the form of a gift card. You may just send a picture to them. And so I investigate this, right? They're using a phone number, usually a VoIP line, right? It's through the internet. I'm tracing them. I'm doing subpoenas, search warrants. I'm tracing them through the internet, right? That's what is fun for me. Ended up figuring out who these guys are. And I end up seizing all of their text messages and phone call records. And I can actually see anytime they like, I can see the area codes of the folks they're calling. And I do this big nationwide broadcast to all these like law enforcement agencies. And I'm like, hey, I happen to know that I think these guys, these scammers, were targeting folks in your area, probably pretending to be your agency. If you have any cases, let me know, because I've already like identified them and stuff. And it ended up becoming this big national thing where I've like, they were just calling people all across the nation. And what's really crazy is I narrowed, they would take these gift cards and cash them. And you could trace a lot of gift cards. A lot of people, folks don't know that. And I found out that all this money was being paid for in certain prisons in Georgia. And prisoners in prison can like spend money and get like food and stuff and get, I don't remember what the phrase is for it, but they can buy things, right?
Conjugal visits, right?
Well, so what I ended up figuring out is all my bad guys were, I'm shitting you not, were operating out of prison. And I even identified my specific guy that victimized my specific victim. And he was in a Georgian prison for murder for life. He's never getting out. And I ended up talking with another detective that was also investigating the same group of guys. And he actually went over there to Georgia because they were like impersonating his command staff on these scam calls. And so they were like, they took it personal.
Yeah.
And he went over there and he said that the prisoners actually became this big corruption thing. The guards would often be like family members, I guess, of the prisoners.
Oh, they're skimming off the gift cards
they
too.
They pay shit money. So they have like all these guards smuggling in phones. And when this other detective went to these prisons, he told me the prisoners would be walking around with fucking headsets like this, scamming people just live.
That's crazy.
And they would spend all this money on just like hamburgers and stuff at the prison.
Yeah.
Sometimes give it to family members. But
so you're not safe from people in prison, even though they're still in prison. You're not safe if you're a billionaire from people like Alex here. But there's hope, right? Like there's a way forward. It's not a sprint. It is a marathon. You can do this step by step. These technical things, you don't have to understand all the technicals. You have to understand the fundamentals of the technicals. You have to understand the significance of your private key, right? Especially if you're going to hold your own Bitcoin, which you should. And so don't get discouraged. But I do encourage you to go find your local meetup. And even if that's 2 hours away, the first like Bitcoiner event I went to was an hour and a half away in DC. But it's a different kind of experience getting into a room with Bitcoiners, looking people in the eye that you know, understand the world in a way that you do as well. Like if you've started down this Bitcoin rabbit hole and you understand that this monetary system is broken that we operate under, and you go around other people like that, look them in the eye, shake their hand, get to know them, use them as a resource to learn this stuff. So don't sit back idly by waiting for some prisoner to call you and scam you out of your money. Don't be a billionaire just frivolously going to these crazy parties and let somebody like Alex come and hack you. Be a good community member. Go find your local Bitcoin meetup. If there's not one, start one. There's probably a Bitcoiner near you. This thing is not going away. This thing is a global system. This is a global technological revolution. And so educating yourself now and getting involved in your local space, I think is the best way to do that. Meet space is still where it's at. Put down your devices, go touch grass, do some push-ups, stay strapped or get clapped. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Travis. Thank you all for listening and joining in today. And if you have any questions, find us at bitcoinveterans.org. We're on the Twitters. We're on the YouTubes. We're on the Noster, all of the social, everything. But we've got group chats going on in Signal. So if you're a veteran and you want to get involved with this, or even if you're a first responder, you want to get involved with this, reach out to us. We'll get you into those groups. We got people talking about citadels, homesteading, guns, security, self-custody, ham radio, all kinds of different topics. We just started an art chat for like people that are into like art and design today, right? So these topics are growing as this Bitcoin veterans group is growing, and we want you to be part of it. Even if you're a civilian, if you're a specialty in one of these spaces, like if you're a badass designer, a badass ham radio operator, we'll take you in. We'll take you under our wing, right? Veterans, we're here to help the community. It's always been a thing that veterans have thrived at, community service, service to others. So get on the mission and get some Bitcoin if you don't have any. Have a good night, everyone.
Have you been paying attention? There's a war going on. A war for your digital sovereignty. A war against digital slavery. There's one way out.